Parsha Shoftim, in Parak Yud Zayin, Pasuk Tes Zayin. The Pasuk says, Rak lo yir below Susan. We're talking about the king. The king cannot have too many horses. But Yoshev is on Mitzrayim, and he cannot bring the people back to Mitzrayim, Laman Harbo Susan, in order to make more horses. HaKadosh Baruch Hu said to you, you should not return on this path ever again. Meaning, you cannot go back to Mitzrayim. The halacha is that we're not allowed to go back to Mitzrayim. Now, there are three places where the Torah warns us that you're not allowed to go back to Mitzrayim. Right here is the second one. The first one is in Parshas B'Shalach, in Parak Yud Dalet Yud Gimel, where Moshe tells the people of the Yamsuf, Lo Sosifu L'Rosamat Olam. Now that doesn't sound like it's a mitzvah. Moshe Rabbeinu is telling them at Yamsuf, when they said, let's go back to Mitzrayim, Moshe Rabbeinu tells them, you'll never see them again. That could be just telling them the truth. Not that you're not allowed to go back there, but rather that you won't go back there. And in Parshas Kisavo, later on, we have the Pasuk, Lo Sosif Od L'Rosa, you will not see it again, but that may be talking about the tomb of Mitzrayim. You will not be around the tomb of Mitzrayim. Here is the law, according to the Rambam, that a person is not allowed to go down to Egypt. The Ibn Ezra and the Chizkuni say this was a mitzvah that was never written down. And that's why it says, Hashem Amar Lachem. Hashem said to you that you're not going to go back down to Mitzrayim. Where did Hashem say it? It's a mitzvah, says the Ibn Ezra and the Chizkuni, but it was never written down in the Sefer Torah. We do not have a specific place. This is what it's based on. But the Rambam paskins from here, from this pasuk, that it is forbidden to live in the land of Mitzrayim. He says in Hilchos Malachim Perek Hey, Halach Zion, unless for three reasons you can go down to Mitzrayim: for business, in order to get merchandise, or in order to conquer other lands. He then goes on and he says it could be that it's mutter for the king to capture the land of Mitzrayim through the permission of Beis Din. That if Beis Din gives them permission to go, then they can go and capture the entire land. But individuals, however, cannot live among the Egyptians because their deeds, the deeds of the Egyptians, are more mekukal. They're destructive and worse than any other nation. There is no malchus for the Yisr because the Yisr is not just in going there, but planning on living there, and planning on living there is only a machshava, it's not a maisa. There's no malchus over there. Regardless, says the Rambam, it's usher to live in Mitzrayim, to decide to live in Mitzrayim for an individual, and for a king to go down there without the intention of capturing it, without the permission of Beis Din. Now, we said that he could go back for business reasons. You're allowed to go there for business reasons. You're allowed to get merchandise from there. So why wouldn't buying horses fall under that category? I mean, you're buying horses. The pasuk says you cannot buy horses so that you won't go down to Mitzrayim. But the Rambam said it's mutter for business purposes. Why would horses be any different from that? So Ramban answers that horses are different. Kings are required to know that God is in charge and that their horses mean absolutely nothing. We say every day, I hate doing this to people, I'm not going to say it, okay? If you don't know it, don't worry, you're not a bad Jew. You're a terrible Jew. You're not a bad Jew. Okay? Eile v'rechav ve'eile basusim. They believe in the chariots and the horses. V'anachnu b'shem elokeinu nazkir. We believe, we mention the name of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. I'm not going to say it, but it's in Lam Natseach, right before Uvalitzion. Okay? It's right over there. We say that we don't believe in horses. They're the ones who believe in the cavalries, that that's what's, how they're going to win, etc. The Ramban says, Jewish kings have to understand that they are a puppet in God's hands, that HaKadosh Baruch Hu is going to take care of them. They don't need to add on horses. Egypt was just a place where you got horses, says the Ramban. But not that it's usher to go to Egypt because of the horses. It doesn't mean it that way. It's a different idea altogether. That's the concept, that we can't go back to Mitzrayim. So really, according to the Ramban, it's a little bit different. It's not that it's only usher to go down to Mitzrayim because of horses. It's usher to go to Mitzrayim because of the bad place. And it's usher to get too many horses, no matter where you get them from. We're putting them together because they're shayach to one another. That's about it. There's no real connection between the two parts of the pasuk. That's how the Ramban says. So normally you can go down to Egypt for business. Normally you can go down to buy a horse or two, but you can't go down to Egypt, period. You can't buy too many horses, period. That's how the Ramban puts it. The Imre Emes, this is the son of the Sfas Emes, says, we mention Egypt because they relied on their own might and their own power. Our king cannot think this way, cannot put himself in position to think that way, that they're the ones in charge, that they're the ones who are doing everything that they can't do. Now, the Gurei Mizrahi say that it's not a question. The whole question of the Ramban is not a question. If the king would do business with Mitzrayim in order to buy horses, he's going to need somebody living there. He's going to need someone in Mitzrayim taking care of the nitty-gritty details of all these sales. And if you're going to have somebody living there, you're over on the Isser. So the Gurei and Mizrahi both say it's not a question in the first place. So the Chassam Sofer says, what's up?
It sounds like people could do business, but The king
cannot do extra business, because the king's business is not like a regular person's. A regular person's business is not that much. He doesn't have to live there. He doesn't have to be there for so long. You're buying off eBay. You're just going to quickly click on something and you'll be gone, right? You're doing something quickly, you're gone. A king, in order to buy something, is going to be he needs a whole entourage. He needs people there in the first place to take care of him. He needs people around, right? He needs all the people there. The Secret Service, before the president goes somewhere, always leave a month or two beforehand to get the place settled down before the president gets there. That would happen with the king as well. You can't do that because you can't have a Jew going in front of you. But the Chassam Sofer says something absolutely brilliant. He says there are two Isurim in the puzzle. It's such a brilliant mind. This is the Chassam Sofer before Ronald Reagan. So we're gonna pull this out over here. An economic genius, the way the Chassam Sofer thought. It goes like this. There are two Isurim in this puzzle that are inherent in this puzzle. Number one, a king is not allowed to buy too many Egyptian horses so that he relies on Hashem and not in the strength and power of his own army. Fine. But you might think the following. If I don't have too many horses, well, my enemy is going to have a ton of horses. So how am I going to win when my enemy has a ton of horses and I don't? Well, I'm going to have to rely on a miracle. I don't want to rely on a miracle. I don't want to rely on a miracle. I want it to be a natural defeat. So what should I do? So listen to what the Chassam Sofer says. The king will do this. He'll go to Egypt, buy horses in order to rack up the price, in order to make the price even higher, because obviously the more demand there is, the higher the price is going to be, so that he outspends his other enemies. Meaning, he's going to make a massive army, but never use it. The king has no intentions of using these horses for anything. He's going to buy the horses and then lead them out to pasture. Never use them for war, never use them for anything. Just have them there for when the enemies try to buy it. The price will be so exorbitant because he bought all these horses, they won't want to buy it. So here's the idea. Again, if the king doesn't buy any horses at all, horses will be cheap. Horses are cheap, your enemy is going to buy them. Your enemy buys them, and you don't have them. The only way you're going to win is by a miracle. He doesn't want to rely on a miracle. So what does he do? He buys all the horses, drives up the price. Your enemies won't be able to buy their horses, and if your enemies don't buy their horses, that's even better. So maybe I can go down to Mitzrayim and buy horses, not to make my army better, but to weaken my enemy, to make my enemy weaker. Maybe that's why I can do it. Says Chassam Sofer, even then, that's the second district. You can't buy horses in order to weaken your enemy. You can't buy horses for your own army. You can't buy horses in order to drive up the price. This is exactly what Ronald Reagan did in the Cold War. In the mid-80s, he figured out that once he was going up against Russia, the more he spends on his defense, right, the more he spends on the army that he had, the more Russia is going to have to spend. The American economy was thriving. The Russian economy was stagnant. It was a communist country, which means he didn't have as much money to be able to spend. So what Ronald Reagan did was something brilliant. He kept spending and spending and spending, eventually somewhat putting us in a recession, right? But he kept spending and spending and spending in order for Russia to keep spending and spending and spending, but they couldn't afford it. So eventually they just stopped, gave in, and the Cold War was over. It was a brilliant move. I don't know if he did it on purpose, but in the end of the day, it was a brilliant move, and the Chassam Sofer saying that's exactly what the king would do in order to get around it, even that's going to be usher. That was the mistake of Shlomo HaMelech. Shlomo HaMelech did exactly that. He never fought a war, Shlomo HaMelech. Why? Because he outspent everybody else. The reason why he bought all those horses and he added on all that money and he did something that's against the Torah is because he said, I'm not doing it for that reason. I'm not buying the horses for an army. I'm not getting the money in order to have Gaiva. I'm doing all this so I can outspend my friends so that everybody will be at peace. If I do this, nobody will wage war because everyone's going to be scared of me. Because I have the greatest army by far. They're just going to be scared of me. I'm never going to use the army. I'm just going to make everyone scared. That was Shlomo Melech's thought. He was wrong, says the Chassam Sofer. He was wrong. That was usher. Even that was considered usher. But it was a brilliant move by Shlomo Melech. It worked. It worked. It did make them peaceful. What's up, Brian?
So if you can't buy the horses, how do you deal with him? Something all
this? So this is what the Torah is telling you. In this case, Ela Bereka Ve'ela Basusim Vanachna B'Shem Elokeinu Nezkir. When it comes to war, rely on a miracle. You're going to have to go with strategies. You're going to have to do whatever you can. But there are points where you're not allowed to do anything but rely on that miracle. That's the crazy part behind it. It's a really, really crazy line. Okay, but we know, and here's the main part of our shir. We know throughout history that Jews have lived in Egypt. From the times of Gedaliah ben Achikam, after the first Beis Hamikdash was destroyed, Gedaliah ben Achikam became, you should know this, it's coming up soon, but Gedaliah ben Achikam became the governor of Eretz Yisrael. He became the governor for either 2.5 years or about 2 months, depending on how you look at it. Regardless, Gedaliah ben Achikam became the governor. He was assassinated by Yishmael ben Esanya. When Yochanan ben Kareach went to go kill him, they went to Yirmiah and they said to Yirmiah, what do we do? Are we going to stay here? Or are we going to go down to Mitzrayim? What should we do? If we stay here, Nebuchadnezzar is going to kill us because we just killed his governor. Right? If we go down to Mitzrayim, right, at least we'll maybe be able to be saved. What should we do? So Yirmiah pushed them off for 10 days. He didn't get a Nebuah yet. Waited 10 days, then came up to them and said, don't go down to Mitzrayim. The people said, it's too late. We're already going down to Mitzrayim. And the people went down to Mitzrayim and they lived there. They lived there until either Nebuchadnezzar came and destroyed them or Alexander the Great destroyed Egypt and took down the entire Jewish nation, whatever, all the Jewish people that live in there, and created Alexandria. That's still in Egypt, obviously. But that's when Alexandria was made. Now, we know the Rambam lived in Mitzrayim. Everybody knows the Rambam lived in Mitzrayim. The Radvaz lived in Mitzrayim. Rav Ovadia Yosef became the Rav of Egypt. He was the Rav in Cairo for 2 years, about 2 years, until he finally left because he couldn't handle it anymore. The people in Egypt were not the types of people that he wanted to work with. But Rav Ovadia Yosef left Eretz Yisrael to go to Mitzrayim to become the Rav there, right? And then went back to Eretz Yisrael. How is that mutter? The Pasuk says straight out that it's us. Or Shmuel was up.
The Rambam, wasn't he the Zaks of his Sultan? So maybe it was because of business.
So that's a good call. That's a really, really good call, that he went down because of business itself, and that might be one of the heterin that we have based on the Rambam. Let's look at some of these answers over here. We're going to have to learn about this. In fact, you should just know that Rav Shmuel HaNagid, who was the grandson of the Rambam. The Rambam's famous son was Rav Avram, the son of the Rambam, right? Son of the Rambam is not the real name, but Rav Avram, his son was Rav Shmuel, Rabbeinu Shmuel HaNagid, who was the leader of Egypt. He says that his grandfather used to sign his letters over B'chol Yom Al Gimel Lavin. I am over on every day on three Lavin, and everybody says that the three Lavin are these three psukim that we mentioned up above, that you can't go back to Mitzrayim. And yet, he went down to Mitzrayim. These three are the ones that are over. Now, first of all, the Yaivet says there's no way he did it. Rabbi Yaakov Avinen says there's no way he signed that in the bottom. Nobody would write their sins straight out in a letter. In a random letter, be like, I sin every day. You wouldn't do that. That sounds ridiculous. That's the Yaivet. Rabbi Reuven Margolius, who is an expert in all the different girsas of the Rambam, says that he never saw a single letter of the Rambam that had that signed on the bottom of it. Rabbi Reuven Margolius saw everything. And if he says that he didn't see it, it's hard to say that it was there. Maybe Rav Shmuel Nagid was talking about one specific thing, but it's hard to say that he would have missed it or something like that. But it is famous. Everybody says that the Rambam signed at the bottom of the letters. We just don't see any of those letters. But for sure, the Rambam says in Halachos that it's usher to go down to Mitzrayim. He says in his Halachos in the Yad HaChazaka it's usher. So how could the Rambam go down? So we're going to give altogether about 9 answers. We'll go through some of them. The Mizrahi says from the Smag that Sancheriv was mevalvel the nations. Egypt is no longer Egypt. The people that are living in Egypt are not the Egyptians. So although it's usher to live in Egypt with the Egyptians, you're allowed to live with the people that are now there because they're no longer Egyptians. So at some point it stopped being Egypt and therefore it's fine. The problem with that is Rabbi Kiva, a Tosefta of Kiddushin, told Minyamin Gir Mitzri. He told Minyamin Gir Mitzri that he had, well, that's the Raya, really, that he had nothing to worry about. But in Sukkah, Nun Aleph Amabez, the Gemara asks why the Jewish community of Alexandria was destroyed. And the Abaye answers, it's because they were over on this Pasuk. Which means, again, this is the community of Alexandria were killed by Alexander the Great. That's why it's called Alexandria. Got it? It makes sense. So that Alexandria was destroyed by Alexander the Great, that was many years after Sancheriv, and yet still, Abaye said, because they were over on the Isser, which means the Isser still applied by the times of the second Beis Hamikdash.
Same thing with Yericho, too. You build up Yericho, whoever builds up is going to die.
Right.
No matter if it's 5775 or back in the day.
Right, no, but that's different. The difference is that was a curse based on the city, on the area. Here we're talking about seemingly the people of Mitzrayim. And if the people are different, right, the people of Mitzrayim, seemingly if they're different, then it shouldn't apply. Right, that's the difference between them. Therefore, says the Smag, says Mizrahi, we have to go with the Shita of Rabbi Elazar Mimitz and the Sefer Yoreim, that the only Isser is to go from Eretz Yisrael to Mitzrayim. The Rambam came from Europe, right, the Radvaz came from, well, seemingly he came from Eretz Yisrael, but there were other people that went around, but you can't go from Eretz Yisrael to Egypt, but you could go from anywhere else to Egypt. That would be allowed. You're allowed to go anywhere else from anywhere. No. Although the Rambam supposedly was in Eretz Yisrael at a time, he did not come from Eretz Yisrael direct. He came by ship to Egypt. That's what it was supposed to be. So either way, regardless, that's the idea. That inference is from the word by Derech Hazeh. Oh, you can't go on this road. Meaning you can't go on this road that they went from Egypt to Israel. You can't take that road down to Egypt. That's the idea behind it. He gives an example. It just sounds ridiculous. Zobrish understands that if we left Egypt with Mesiras Nefesh, like we were willing to give our souls over to God, and we were doing anything, we were walking in the desert with nothing on us and no food and no anything, and we're willing to lose our lives in order to go there, then it seems there's no way that you could go back on that road that they were Mesiras Nefesh to get out of. How could you walk back on the same road where they were like, thank God we left, and you're running back saying, I can't wait to get there. That's the shot. You can't go back to Egypt on the roads that the Jews took to take to Eretz Yisrael, because there were Mesiras Nefesh for it. It's just a simple example that Yitzchak Zilberstein gives for Mesiras Nefesh when it comes to Chinuch. He says, there was a cheder in Eretz Yisrael that opened their doors in the morning. They saw in the shul all the siddurim and the chumashim were on the ground. A few of them were torn up. They were destroyed. So they thought that there were, you know, that a couple of Arabs came in and destroyed everything. They realized it wasn't an Arab. It was a kid in the cheder. It was somebody in 7th grade, 8th grade, a kid before his bar mitzvah. So they found out who it was, and they decided altogether they have to kick the kid out. There's nothing he can do. So the teacher said, give me one day with this kid. Let's see what we can do in one day. So they knew that something was wrong. Obviously something was wrong with this kid, but the teacher felt that he could do something. So what did he do? He called in the kid's parents, and he brought in his class, and he brought them into the base medrash where everything had just been cleaned up, but it was still a little bit messy. And he put the kid on a chair, wrapped him up in a talus, and told him to say vidui. Now, this is in Eretz Yisrael, so the kid understood what vidui meant. Okay? So the kid had to say ashamnu, but God knew, knowing what it means, gazalnu, dibarnu dofi, in front of the whole class, in front of his parents, and in front of his rebbe. And the kid started doing it, and then he started feeling it, sitting there with a talus in the shul where he had destroyed it, saying the vidui in front of everybody. He eventually started crying. Some of the kids started crying with it. I'm not telling you whether this is mutter or not for the fact that there was busha involved with this kid. I can't tell you that. But I will tell you the result of the story. So, and regardless, the kid did it. He started crying and started, you know, started feeling this and started whatever. And eventually he couldn't even finish. They tried pushing him through and tried finishing. And he said, I promise I'm never going to do this again. He got all into it. He got all this. He slavos, etc. The kids repeated every word after him. So he got there and the child started to say, like, this was like Yom Kippur to me. This felt like Yom Kippur. I felt like it was entirely Yom Kippur. So he asked to be let back in. He was serious. He apologized. He was willing to do anything in order to be let back in. He was allowed back in. And yes, Yitzchak Zilberstein says he grew up to be a very great gadol. Now, I can't tell you, it would be great if we knew the answer. It was just like, and that's Rav Eliashiv. That would be awesome. I can't tell you that. I have absolutely no idea. But Yitzchak Zilberstein says he became a very great gadol from what happened. That's the amount. And the shot is that the teacher understood that a person giving themselves over, being Moser Nefesh for something, will never give it up ever again. And he was able to make that, and the teacher himself was Moser Nefesh, for his kids realizing, his Talmidim, realizing what each one of them needed, which is an amazing, amazing lesson aside there. Now let's get to the next level, the next answers over here. We got the third answer, the Rabbeinu Bachaya. This mitzvah is only at that time, says Rabbeinu Bachaya. Now this is such an interesting Rabbeinu Bachaya, because there is, the Rambam doesn't say this. It's not brought in the Gemara, it's not Yerushalmi, it's not a Medrash. The Rabbeinu Bechaya gets up in the 1200s and says the mitzvah of going down to Egypt was only for that time, but not for later on. Now it's mutter. That's the idea. And the reason why the Rabbeinu Bechaya says, because Egypt was a powerful, influential nation. It would cause Jews to go astray and worship idols and do a riot. So when they ceased to be an influential nation, when they no longer had that power, then it's mutter. Then there's no problem. There's no problem, says Rabbi Nebuchadnezzar. You're allowed to go down there and there shouldn't be any problem. And he says it's such circular logic. Because otherwise, why would everybody have allowed themselves to be there? Why would anybody be mako on themselves? Since the Rambam went down there and lived there, it must be its mutter. It must be its only lishal. It's crazy because the Rambam doesn't say that in his halachos. And it's really circular logic. Like he's saying, the Rabbi Nebuchadnezzar is saying, the reason why it's mutter is because people live there. But maybe they're doing something wrong. No, if people live there and they didn't have a problem with it, it must be its mutter. How is it mutter? Must be it was only for that time. The mitzvah doesn't apply anymore. It's a crazy answer from the Rabbi Nebuchadnezzar. But that's what he says. The Tzedu Aderek says, what does the Rabbi Nebuchadnezzar do with the Gemara and Sukkah? We said up above that Abaye said that they were over on this pasuk. The reason why Alexandria was destroyed is because they were over on this pasuk. They went down to Mitzrayim. But there's nothing wrong. You just said that it's only Lashah. There was no problem with going down to Mitzrayim. How could he go against the Gemara? How could the Rabbi Nebuchadnezzar literally go up against the Gemara? So Rabbi Shavel, anybody know who Shavel is? The Rambans and the Rabbi Nebuchadnezzar that are made in those two volume sets and the three volume sets, they're Moset or Rav Kook Rambans. On the bottom there's notes. The notes are written by Rabbi Shavel. He's a brilliant Talmud Chacham. Was a brilliant Talmud Chacham. Wrote all the notes on the Ramban and the Rabbi Nebuchadnezzar. And he has an answer for this. He says there's another Gemara. The other Gemara is mentioned, I have it down over here, in Gittin Daf Nun Zayin, where Abaye himself asked Rav Yosef, Abaye, the same person that said above that they were destroyed because they went down to Mitzrayim, he asked Rav Yosef why the Jews in Mitzrayim were destroyed. He asked the same question. And he was answered because they didn't mourn the destruction of the Beis HaMikdash. They didn't do Avelos. Rav Yosef did not answer because they went down to Mitzrayim. He must have felt, Rav Yosef must have felt, that there was no problem going down to Mitzrayim. Rav Yosef was the Rebbe, Abaye was the Talmud. We always hold, like, the Rebbe over the Talmud. So Rabbi Nebuchadnezzar went with Rav Yosef, the Rebbe, over Abaye, his Talmud. That's a brilliant answer by Rav Shavel. But it's at least Machlokas Amoraim to be able to get there. That's that. The Marshal and the Ritva and Yuma Lamed Ches both answer simply, this pasuk is only makbid about us going down to Egypt when we're living in Eretz Yisrael and we're doing good things. If people are living in Eretz Yisrael, then it's also to go down to Egypt. If there's no community in Eretz Yisrael, you're allowed to go down to Egypt. Which means nowadays, it would be a bit of a problem. But in the years of the Rambam, of the Radvaz, between the years of 600 and maybe 800 and the year 1948, there would be no problem in going down to Egypt because there was nobody living in Eretz Yisrael. If there's nobody living in Eretz Yisrael, then it's going to be Mutter. That's what the Marshal says, and that's what the Ritva says. That's the answer, and that's why it's going to be over there. The Tzitz Eliezer, Rabbi Eliezer Waldenberg, who passed away a few years ago, he's an Avdiz and tremendous Shalos Vetshuva, says, he tries to show how the Rambam holds like the Ritva, but it's a bit of a stretch. But one of the biggest proofs to all this is that, you'll notice, I've only been mentioning the Rambam when it comes to not living in Mitzrayim. The Shulchan Aruch does not say a thing about going down to Egypt. He doesn't say it at all. He says, he doesn't say anything, which means he must have held it was mutter. He must have held it was mutter. The Tur does not bring it. Which means, again, the Tur must have held there was mutter to go to Mitzrayim. How could the Tur and the Shulchan Aruch say there was mutter to go to Mitzrayim? They say it's because it only applied at that time. It didn't apply later on. That's how they understand it, and that's how they say it's got to be that the Rambam agrees with this, and that they say it was only for that time, otherwise it's mutter to go to Egypt, which means it should be mutter for most people to go down to Egypt now, right? Maybe not because we live in Eretz Yisrael, but the idea is that it only applied for that time. Now, the Be'er Vasada says a crazy chiddush, that the only problem with Egypt was when they were Ovdei Avodah Zarah. When the Arabs took over Egypt, I'm not a historian, I don't know when that happened. I would assume it happened in the year 800 of the Common Era. I would assume. But somebody's going to have to get me, yeah? It's around Muhammad, yeah. Well, when Muhammad went through, it was after Muhammad, probably about 50 years after Muhammad died, is when they would have taken over Egypt, around the year 800. At that time, it was mutter to live in Egypt. Because the Islamic nation believe in God, there is no Avodah Zarah, and they're Godim Arias. They don't do Arias, that we know about. Let's assume. Okay, the assumption is that way, right? But regardless, therefore, it became a different place and it was mutter to live there. That's the idea. But it's a strange shot. The reason falls off, so we get rid of the mitzvah? That's a strange thing. Why would we ever do that? That's a strange thing altogether.
Yeah, we don't do now, they think it can't happen.
because it can't happen, but not because the reason fell off. The Gra is famous that we do, everybody does Mayim Achronim, well, you should be doing Mayim Achronim after you eat a meal. You wash your hands a little bit. Why? Because we all know, right? Melech Sedomis, right? The salt, you know, the salt's going to get into you and it's going to blind you, right? I've never seen Melech Sedomis, nor has it ever been an issue. I don't think it's been an issue by anybody, but nonetheless, we all hold with it. I'm sorry? We don't know. I mean, it's whatever type of salt. The Melech Sedomis should be Dead Sea salt, and supposedly it blinded you if you put it in your eyes. We've never seen it. Why don't we leave water or drinks uncovered overnight? Because the snakes are going to put their poison in there. You've ever had that problem? No, because you always cover your drinks. But if you didn't, right, we've never heard of such a thing. You show, by the way, there was a story, Reb Chaim Knievsky was shown, it's only in Bnei Brak, they still have milkmen in the morning, and they're delivered milk bottles. So one of the milk bottles that was delivered in Bnei Brak in the morning did not have a cover on it. And they brought the milk bottle to Reb Chaim, and they showed him a snake was inside the milk bottle. There was a snake in there. Now he drowned. Because apparently he didn't know the halacha well enough. But regardless, he showed to Rechaim. Rechaim was like, see, I told you, the snakes still exist. There's still snakes out there. Regardless, we keep the mitzvah even though, right, it doesn't seem to apply to us nowadays. So that's a weird answer from over there. There's a Targum Yonasan as well. The Radvaz says an interesting answer. The Radvaz, by the way, also lived in Mitzrayim. So I don't want to say it this way because you can't say this about Rav David Ben Zimmer, who was a tremendous Talmid Chacham, but he had a vested interest in matering living in Mitzrayim. He lived in Egypt. So you don't want to say that that's why he was makel about it, but he did write about it. He wrote that I live in Egypt, and he said, because the Rambam says he can go down for merchandise. So not only for merchandise, not only for business. If you're running away from a corrupt government, if you're running away from being killed, you can run to Mitzrayim. If you're trying to get away from evil people, then you can live in Mitzrayim. The Rambam ran away from Europe because he was running away from evil people. He went to Mitzrayim to escape those evil people. That's why he went down to Mitzrayim. Once he got there, he became the doctor for the Pharaoh, or whoever was in charge of the king, the Sultan at the time, in Mitzrayim. And then he couldn't leave. So he went there, beheter, to escape from someone, says the Radvaz. And then once he was there, he wasn't able to leave, and that's that. And in fact, says Radvaz, he fought the Karaites who lived in Mitzrayim. The Karaim lived in Mitzrayim. They didn't believe in Torah Shabbat Peh. He fought them all the time. It was a mitzvah for him to be there. The Radvaz says, and me myself, although I didn't go there for that reason, I went there in order to make a yeshiva. I went there to go teach Torah. And it's mutter to go to Mitzrayim in order to go teach Torah, says the Radvaz. That, as a side note, will answer Ovadia Yosef. Rav Ovadia Yosef also went to become the rabbi of Mitzrayim. If you're going there to teach Torah, then it's going to be mutter. Then it would be allowed. That's the pshat behind it. That's why Rav Ovadia Yosef would have been there as well. Anyway, the Chiddush says through Kabbalah. Now, we don't paskin based on Kabbalah, but it is a cool little vort. That the reason why we don't go down to Mitzrayim, but nowadays we do, the reason why they didn't, is because when the Jews left Mitzrayim, they took out all the sparks of Kedusha from Mitzrayim. The only reason why we're in Golos in the first place is in order to grab those sparks of Kedusha and bring them back to us. I hope you're doing this. But wherever you go, you should make brachos, say tefillahs, right? Do whatever you can in order to bring back that Kedusha to you. I'm sitting in Lake Geneva this past week, right? And as I'm sitting there, I know it's Rosh Chodeshel, I know. Skokie is not that type of yeshiva. So regardless, I was sitting there, and as I was sitting there, I made sure that when I davened in an area that I felt that no one has ever done anything kadosh in, right? No one, right? And that's most of the area, right? And I figured I'll bring a little bit of Kedusha there, and that way you're pulling out the Kedusha from that place so that the place can now be destroyed. Right after I left, a tornado hit Lake Geneva. Not saying it's a coincidence, I'm saying it's because, anyway, regardless, right, it happened that night, it was so cool. Anyway, regardless, that's the idea, says the Chiddush, that's the pshat, that they're able to pull out that Kedusha, bring it into them, they're able to take out the sparks of Kedusha from there. But once everything is over, once the whole thing is done, once they went out of Mitzrayim, they left Paro, Moshe Rabbeinu told Paro, I never want to see you again. They took all the Kedusha out, there's no Kedusha left. So we don't have to go back to Egypt. There's no reason to go down there. The only reason to go into Golis is to pull out the Kedusha. But there's no Kedusha there. It's all gone. So don't go there. But he says the Chiddush, but then individual Jews went down there anyway. The Jews by the time of Gedaliah ben Achikam, the Jews went a little bit later with Aristobulus and Hyrcanus. They went down there. When they went down there, they sinned. that Kedusha is now lost to Mitzrayim again. So nowadays, it's mutter to go back to Mitzrayim to pull out the Kedusha that they left inside Mitzrayim. So it was usher to go back because there's no Kedusha. Now it's mutter because there is some Kedusha left. What's up?
Weren't they on the 49th level when they left? The
49th level of Tumah.
Right.
But Moshe Rabbeinu was more powerful than we can imagine. And he was able to pull everything out through Paro. And you're right, that's why they have to get to Kriyas Yamsuf, where they were able to pull the rest of it out. Right? That was the gold that they took, the riches that they took. But regardless, that's the idea behind it. Tzitz Eliezer says, at the end of the day, it seems like, since we live in Eretz Yisrael, if you don't have to go down to Mitzrayim, you shouldn't go down there. You should do anything to make sure that you don't live there. You could visit, but you shouldn't go down there in order to live there. And in fact, Adarab, if we can, we should pull out the rest of the Jews, get them out of there. There's no reason for people to be there anymore. But he says something so interesting. I'm not going to go into this so much, but I just want you to know. He matters Cairo. He says Cairo, the city of Cairo, is not part of biblical Egypt. Now, if you look at a map, which I did, right, all I had to do was go on Waze, and I said, how do I get to Cairo? And eventually it brought me to the actual map, and then it did, you know, the satellite thing or whatever it was. So I went down there, and I saw Cairo is, the Nile River goes up and becomes the delta. It pushes off everywhere. Now, all of Egypt is desert, except around the Nile River. The whole thing is sand everywhere, except the Nile River. It's actually cool to see from a satellite, because it's literally yellow, 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 and then river is like brown, and then green all along the river. Nothing else is like that. Now, when it branches off into that delta, Alexandria, which is where biblical Egypt was, is all around this area, the big branches that go out. Cairo's right here. All the pyramid of Giza, like the famous ones and everything, are right by Cairo. So I have no idea why the Radbaz said that Cairo was never part of biblical Egypt. That's where the pyramids were. Now, unless the pyramids were not owned by those Egyptians of the times of the Bible, which I don't know, I have absolutely no idea. My Egyptian history is just, I went to Skokie, what can you do, right? It's not where it should be. Regardless, I have no idea how you could say that Cairo wasn't there. But he even says, Tzitz Eliezer says, maybe that's why the Rambam moved from Alexandria to Cairo. Because he wanted to get out from Alexandria, which was biblical Egypt, and he lived in Cairo, which wasn't biblical Egypt. I have no idea how he knows the Rambam went from Alexandria to Cairo. I'm assuming that's some sort of a Kabbalah that he had. I don't know what that is. I asked somebody who's an expert in these types of things. I asked him if he heard of that, and he said he had no idea that the Rambam moved to Cairo, but he assumed, like everybody else, that he lived around the Alexandrian area, right around that area. I have absolutely no idea, but he does say that it's mutter to live in Cairo. So if you want to live in Cairo that's not biblical Egypt, that should be okay. That would be perfectly fine. I'm not going to mention Rav Hirsch, but I'm going to tell you the Rav Hirsch is unbelievable. If you want to look it up, go check it out. It's an absolute unbelievable one. It's just, we're not worthy right now. The Me'ah Shiloach, the Ishbitzer, says a tremendous word as well. Someone who gets used to doing something which is difficult for him to stop. Like, let's say you're addicted to hot dogs, or candy, or cake, or all of the above, okay? And you just can't stop yourself from doing it, right? Or, let's say even more so, you're addicted to caffeine, like coffee, or Coke, or pot, or drinking, or whatever it is. You have an addiction to something or a dependency on something, for those who are very into it. It's not an addiction, okay, it isn't. Okay, regardless, sugar, anything like this, any type of thing that you can be addicted or dependent on, you are over on this pasuk of lo sosifun lerosam ad olam. That's the pasuk. Now why? Says the Me'ah Shiloach, it's crazy. Even though it's mutter. Even though it's technically mutter. I'm not saying pot is mutter. Even though everything else would be mutter in theory, to be addicted or dependent on it and to need it and to keep wanting it again and again and again, that, he says, is going to be elsewhere. This is why. Mitzrayim was a land filled with tovos and taivas of this world. Filled with it. It was called a Gan Hashem, a garden of God, by the times of Avraham Avinu. That's how much. The places around the Nile Delta were beautiful. Beautiful and filled with stuff. They were so filled with these thoughts that they had to fulfill their every desire that people couldn't leave Egypt. The Avdus in Mitzrayim, when it says that a slave never left Egypt, says the Me'ah Shiloach, it meant you were in a slave mentality that you had to give into your taivos, so you couldn't leave because you wanted to be there forever. You just wanted to go again and again and again. It was so much fun. I don't want to stop. So because that you wouldn't leave Mitzrayim, not that you couldn't leave Mitzrayim, you wouldn't leave Mitzrayim, says the Me'ashi Loach. That's the pshat, that it was so filled with disciples you couldn't get around it. The idea is, again, this is a famous Me'ashi Loach, because this is one that I heard years ago, that Ramos Shapiro was very upset about, that the avoda of Mitzrayim that we were under, it was not back-breaking labor, we were carrying bricks or stuff like that. It was an avoda of tithes, in which we couldn't get away from it. We were so into sports and movies. Oh, that's now. We were so into whatever they had back then, which was probably nothing in comparison to sports and movies and everything else. They couldn't stop themselves. You know, I talked to a guy that he had like a day off of yeshiva for whatever reason. There was something happening. And I asked him like what he did that day. I said, did you catch up on your sleep? Did you whatever? And he told me, oh no, I had a TV show. I had to catch up on 3 seasons worth of this TV show. Right? So he did the math for me. There's 20 minutes per show. There are altogether 20 shows, let's say, in the season. Okay? So that's 400 minutes for those who are counting right now. 400 minutes. Now, if there are 60 minutes in an hour, which usually there are, okay, then 400 minutes altogether, give or take, let's see if we can figure this out, almost 6 hours. Now that would be okay if he didn't do 3 seasons worth. He literally spent 18 hours of his day watching this TV show. I told him, I'm like, how did you eat? How did you go to the bathroom? See, the bathroom wasn't a problem because he brought his computer with him. That wasn't an issue. I said, how did you eat? He said, that's not a problem. I paused for the 2 minutes for me to go quickly put something in a microwave and bring it back. 18 hours. If that's not a slave to anything, I don't know what a slave is. I have absolutely no idea. I don't know. I wasn't paying attention when you told me the TV show. I'm assuming it was like Breaking Bad or one of those, like, you know, the one of those that everybody's like, you haven't seen it? How do you live? Doing pretty well. I don't know. But either way, regardless, that's that. This was the mindset that they couldn't get rid of, and that's the idea, he says. The Pardes Yosef says, the Rashi Tevis of the words, V'Hashem Omar Lachem. V'Hashem Omar Lachem Lo Sosifon. That you won't go back. V'Hashem Omar Lachem Lo Rashi Tevis El. Because that's what El is supposed to be all about. That we're supposed to, when we go down the path of Mitzrayim into that path of Taivas, that's what we're saying, you have to start doing tshuva. And our last thing is the Chofetz Chaim. He says, why when the pasuk starts off with the word susim in plural, and it ends off leman harbo sus in singular? What's the difference between the plural and the singular? He says, when a person first does an avera, you know, when the avera presents itself, he can stop himself. He'll stop himself and say, you know what, I'm not going to do it. I don't want to do it. He's able to stop himself. He looks at it and he's like, I'm not going to do this. But once he does it once, he'll feel guilty. He'll feel guilty, but it becomes easier for him. He'll have that guilt feeling. He's like, I'm not going to do it again. I'm not going to do it again. Once he does it 3 or 4 or 5 times, then it's like the easiest thing in the world. This becomes part of his whole situation. He can't get himself out of it. He's just going to do it again and again and again. Says the Chofetz Chaim, a person, before he's ever broken Shabbos before in his life, would never open up his store, even if he'd make $1 million. A person comes up to you and says, listen, you know, I will buy $1 million worth of your wares from you, but you have to open up your store on Shabbos. A person who's never broken Shabbos before is going to be like, no, I'm never going to do that. If you've broken Shabbos once before, you'll have the thought in your head. Think like, maybe I could do it this time, maybe I'll give to yeshiva. That's a good thought, right? Once you've broken it a bunch of times already, then it's not even a shiloh. It's not even a shiloh. You wouldn't even ask a rov. You just say, like, I'm going to go ahead and do it. Here's the pshat, there's a Chofetz Chaim. Even if you could make a huge profit and could get hundreds of horses at a great price, you won't go down to Mitzrayim. That's the law. The law. The law is don't go down to Mitzrayim. But if you do go down to Mitzrayim and you get horses and you end up doing it, then you're willing to go down to Mitzrayim even for one horse. So in the beginning of the pasuk where you haven't done it yet, it's susim. For horses, you can't go down to Mitzrayim. But at the end of the day, when you already have, then you'll go down to Mitzrayim even leman harbos sus. In order to make a profit of one horse, even then you'll go down to Mitzrayim. Says the Chofetz Chaim, that's the way we are. That's the way our Yetzirah works. So the chazak is very quickly. We said there are 3 places where we said it's usher. We went through the first part. We asked, isn't this business? We gave the Ramban's answer, the Chassam Sofer's answer, the Gurari and the Mizrahi's Rashi's answer. Then we said, how could people live down there? We spoke about Rosh Shmuel Nagid and the Rambam. We gave the Mizrahi's answer. We gave over the answer of Rabbi Elazar Mitz, the Sefer Yoram, said the Rabbeinu Bachaya, the Maharshal, the Be'er Batsadeh. We skipped the Targum Yonasim and Uziel. We said the Rabbaz and the Chidah. We skipped Rav Hirsch because it's too awesome for us to do. Then we had the Me'ah Shiloah with that last idea of what Mitzrayim was all about, and the Chafetz Chaim, to how to understand what this is all before. We'll stop with this, guys. Have a great Shabbat.